Ring me back, Geordie.
Yeah. Hi, Michelle.
Hi, Geordie.
G'day, g'day. G'day, g'day. And how you going?
Oh, Jesus Christ.
Started singing already because I'm in the mood. I'm in the mood for music, Michelle.
Well, funny you should mention that, Geordie, because that's exactly what we're talking about today.
We've been very lighthearted the last few weeks, haven't we, after all the heavy nonsense we've been chatting about?
Well, we've needed it because what have we been talking about? Murder.
Murders.
Sexual abuse.
Sexual abuse.
Woody Allen.
Yeah.
Oh, I mean, all the fun topics.
Baby being snatched. I know. Now,
what is wrong with us?
I don't know. We just like the dark side. And sometimes it's hard to make light of the dark side all the time. So I think that's why we're just letting loose. Last week's episode was a fun potluck party, though, wasn't it? I think it sounded like we were both hitting the juice pretty hard. We both sounded like a pair of nutters.
Oh, what's new? I have to say, though, maybe a small apology to anybody who has seen your latest TikTok with eavesdropping.
Lordy.
I don't even know. You were drunk writing that.
Listen, I've got eyesight issues and, you know, I was juggling motherhood with social media queen action.
And drinking. Yeah,
I wasn't drinking. They were both empty. I found those out in my, that's in my husband's open shed area. That's where he keeps all his bits and bobs.
You were telling me it was fake with brown lemonade.
It's a fake brown lemonade.
No.
Soz.
Michelle's getting cut. Geordie had a tear. Ben Mantis loves brown lemonade. To you, that's a cold beer.
Crack open a cold one, love. Gives a tinny.
We haven't talked about Ben Mendelsohn for a while. I just want to say his name, Ben Mendelsohn. He's an actor. He's Australian. He's one of the most underrated actors of all time. We've only just really come to know and love him since we started this podcast because you thought his career was over just because you haven't seen him in anything for a long time.
I thought his career was basically in the same place you were when you put your marigolds on for that last video.
Oh, the toilet.
Down the toot.
Yeah.
Toot.
The tootie.
Do you call
it? I'm on the toot. No, I haven't heard that expression for a very long time. Something that my aunt used to call it. Oh, she's on the toot, love.
I know, it's very Australian.
Yeah, toot. Where does that come from? Tamira got in touch.
Oh, I saw that. How is she?
She's great as always. Lovely Tamira. She was our guest on our Instagram live recently. She's often mentioned. She's our friend. She's also a numerologist and a modern mystic. And she's got tamira.com is her website if you want to go and check out what she talks about. She came up with some great ideas for a future episode. So I'm going to just announce that we now have a new researcher because where the hell is Al Teggett? Where are you, Al?
He's lost in space. That's where Al
is. And Hannah Huggis, I haven't heard any great stories yet. I reached out and she said, I don't have anything for you. So that was it. Thanks. What if my life depended on it, Hannah?
That honestly, I mean, they were already on a zero pay scale, but that's even,
well,
that's minus zero right now.
We'll take that into consideration in future that they didn't show up to work a couple of times. But now we've got Tamira. She's going to be, she's hunkered down already. She's flung me about four or five articles for us to look at regarding a certain topic that we can discuss after this show because we want to keep it a surprise, listeners.
I know. We've got some juicy Lucy's coming up, haven't we?
Absolutely. What the hell is that?
Juicy Lucy.
Goodness me.
Juicy Lucy. We've got some juicy eps.
So what are we talking about?
Juicy content.
Well, what about today's one though, Michelle? What's the idea behind today's music episode?
It's just music. Honestly, I have no theme, no structure for this, more than a couple of bits.
Okay.
What about you? Don't give me that voice.
Okay. Well, you were very keen to talk about music because we're both musicians or ex-musicians.
Well, look, that's
since
the thing.
All your instruments went up in flames.
Look, we both have a history of music. As you can tell, Geordie's a singer.
From all of our, yes, and all of our beautiful ditties.
No, but we both have, you know, a past that has where music has been really important.
Michelle was massive in Japan, of all things, in a big pop band that was famous in Japan. She was treated like rock royalty, pop royalty, let's call it.
Yeah, we were pop royalty, and I wouldn't say we were big in Japan. We were medium. We were medium on the edge of big, but we never quite broke through. But you know what? We had the best tours. I mean, I absolutely love Japan because of that. We toured there between 2 and 3 times a year in normal times. Obviously, yeah. I haven't been in that band for quite some time now. Yeah, but when we were touring a lot, and you know, we toured all over the world.
Yeah,
it was wonderful experience. Yeah, I wouldn't trade it.
The
anything.
Only girl as well. I mean, I didn't have that experience because I always had at least one other girl in bands with me.
No, I was always the girl, and obviously, you know, I had my bands in Australia and then the band in the UK, and yeah, I have sort of let it go recently, which is a little bit hard for the soul because I do miss it.
It's hard to let it go.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's why we're doing this, and we can bash out a jingle. And if God forbid we ever go live, like out there, Michelle and I will be putting on a musical show because we've worked together many times, haven't we? Like you've been a stand-in for some of my bands, and we have done party bands where we perform for there was a whole year of birthday parties and wedding parties that we performed at.
They were great fun. They were
really
good fun.
Then we did covers.
Wigs went flying.
Wigs would fly. We'd dress up and kind of, it was almost like a lip sync, but we were singing live.
Yes, and playing live too.
And playing live, yeah.
Yeah. So it was brilliant fun. And I do miss that, actually. I do miss the feeling that you get from playing. And not just the audience. It's actually when you're creating music, because both of us are songwriters as well. Yeah, the creative process, for me, what I find really exciting but also really daunting when you sit down to write a song is you sit there and you don't know what's going to come. You don't know if any inspiration will come. But it's this really exciting thing of creating something out of nothing, because when you sit down an hour, 2 hours later, something is now in the universe that wasn't there before.
I know, I love it.
You've created something.
Yeah.
And it's such a magical feeling. It's wonderful. And I really miss that because I don't have collaborators here. And obviously I don't have any instruments here because they've all gone up in flames. Aww. And it hasn't been great musically for the last few years, but I've had my head in other things.
So, Michelle, you were a bass player, as was I in the very beginning. I started out as a bass player, yes, when I was 14.
Oh my God, that's right. Your mum bought you.
My
mum
bought me the canary yellow bass and boiled the strings, and she put it all together with all her little handy tools.
Yep.
And I was in the school rock band at 14, and I was in the school normal band, but I couldn't read music very fast. So I would just riff along with what I thought it should go like. And luckily it was things like the Sweeney theme tune, and I know how that goes. But I'd sit down and I at 14 was into bands like U2 and INXS and The Cure, and I can play the bass lines of every single Cure song up until probably about 1986. Every single one.
Wow. See, my entree into music was different to yours, because I was spotted by my teacher, like really young, as a singer.
Yeah.
And they put me into the Canberra Children's Choir.
Aww.
So we were singing operas. We were doing all sorts of things. And then
me.
I was also learning the trumpet.
Oh.
Yeah. That was, you've got me in the school classical band with the trumpet.
Great.
Didn't last long.
Toot.
Didn't last long.
No.
Was never very good on the recorder. Always had an interest in guitar, but never had lessons.
Uh-huh.
But always wanted to sing. And then ended up in the high school band.
Yes.
Called Retro.
Retro.
Yeah.
Let's give
Retro.
It up, ladies and gentlemen, for year 8 and Retro.
That's exactly it.
Drop the and pilot. Smell my perfume. That was one that my band played, actually.
It was actually everybody wants to rule the world.
That's a good one.
It was a good
one. I love Tears for Fears, by the way. They are one of my faves.
Absolutely fantastic band. And you know what? Music from that era whether it was, I mean, you were obviously into cooler bands than me. I mean, yes. I had every boy joy.
Although that's questionable as well.
I had every Boy George single, album, picture disc, everything. I loved.
I wasn't Culture Club. Although I was fascinated with them when they came out, clearly.
Me too. And I loved Marilyn. I think I loved this androgynous. No. Are they not? Like, what's their sexuality? Like, it was very interesting to me. I loved Boy George. My sister will tell you my entire bedroom wall was covered with pictures of Boy George, mm-hmm. and she had Wham.
So they weren't for me. I was still into Adam Ant by that point.
Oh, we'd been and gone past.
Oh, okay. So then maybe I'd moved into U2 at that point. Then I don't know. Or The Police,
ABBA. My God,
I loved
they
ABBA.
They were the shit.
They were the Spice Girls of our generation.
I guess they were. I used to be really lucky. I used to ring up the local radio station. They would always have these things like, call now. And you'd have to like be speedy on the dial to be able to win stuff. And I used to win everything.
Yeah.
I won Blondie. I won ABBA Arrival. I won all these albums. You had to go pick them up outside of Canberra to the radio station. Yeah, that's how I got a lot of my music, was I won
Amazing.
All these albums. You could choose what you wanted. So it was great. But, you know, Mum was also really into music. We always had the radio on. But it's funny how even now, songs from my childhood that, you know, you would hear over and over again on the radio, I can sing them word for word.
Mm-hmm. Because you listened to them as a child.
Yeah. I mean, there was always music on in my house. And actually, my dad was a wonderful singer, and my uncle on my Italian side, I'm not sure if he was the Eurovision entrant for Italy.
Or attempted,
but there is something
exciting.
There. Yes, I know. He was wonderful. So I think there is a musical sort of history in my family. What about you?
Zero. Absolute zero.
Wow. So your talent came out of nowhere.
Out of nowhere. And interest as well. I mean, I was interested in music from a really young age, but my parents weren't really driven by music in the way that I am. And
did they have music on in the house?
Occasionally they'd put on an LP and it would be something like James Last. James Last
what?
Is like, he's a man who had like he had like a pop orchestra. So they would be playing things like, I don't know, Little Brown Jug or the conga. On horns. Or it was Richard Clayderman, who was a pianist.
My mum had Richard Clayderman.
And Robert Humperdinck. Or who's the other guy? Neil Sedaka. He's actually all right. For pop kind of thing. So that was their kind of thing. But for me, no way. But they did buy me my first album, which was, first of all, they bought me Leo Sayer, but that didn't go down so well. And I was really young. And then they bought me Blondie Parallel Lines. And I would sit with my tape recorder and sing really, I wish I still had the tapes, sing really close to it, like all the, because it had the words on the inside and you'd sing along.
Yes.
So
because in those days, you would get an album and all the lyrics would be on the inside sleeve.
Yeah. So you could sing along.
And of course you would at the top of your voice. Yeah. But, you know, looking back, Jen actually had really eclectic music taste. And, you know, she had everything from Pajama Game and all of those My Fair Lady, like all of those kind of classics. Doris Day, my God, she had loads of Doris Day albums.
Wow.
But then she had things like Donna Summer.
Oh, yeah, cool.
So she had a lot of disco. She also had Richard Clayderman. So she, Barbara Streisand, she had Babs.
Oh, that's good.
She had loads of stuff, but she also had kind of edgy things, like really cool jazz records. So Mum just, and Beatles. She had loads of Beatles on cassette.
I love the Beatles. Do you remember going back to your choir experience and being spotted? And do you remember we were once on tour? You were standing in on bass for us.
Was this in Norway?
Norway. We didn't end up playing a single show, but we had a great time. We got drunk.
Shout out to Ben Rain and
James Corner. Yes, in the band.
Time.
And also to all the people who helped us, like had us sleeping on their floor. And that was
Martin, wonderful Martin.
Martin, yes, Martin Kvamme. He helped us out a lot, and his wife Tura. Shout out.
Shout out.
You're getting a shout out.
Anyway, we went to, where did we go? It was called Grønlandshagen.
Oh my God, how could we forget that?
Grønlandshagen, which is just outside, it's somewhere in Oslo, outside the city limits, some big old, and there was always a big band. It was really cheesy. It was fantastic. And they wanted people from the audience to get up and sing. And you were so up for it. You were trying to drag me up, but I was like, no way, I'm too cool for school. So you went up and sang.
What did I sing?
Rolling Stone, like Rolling. I can't remember. It was some old jazz standard.
Oh my God.
I don't have evidence of it, but
how did it go down?
Really well. You were high as a kite. Just on life.
High on life.
I've accentuated that with that ching ching ching. There's my tambourine just went off.
But those were the days, you know, like I honestly look back now. I actually wish you and I had been in a band and done more of that kind of stuff because we had such fun in Norway. And obviously, you know, I always had really good fun in my bands, but I was always with a boyfriend.
Yeah.
So it's a different dynamic, you know, because then you have the tension of a relationship. I mean, you just have to look at Fleetwood Mac, you know, and how things go down in a band when there's a relationship. It's, you know, it can be really difficult.
For sure.
So actually the times when you and I were doing things were always so much fun because it's just about friends and the music.
Yes. Yeah. It was always a laugh or something would always happen. It was great times. Good times.
They were great times. And do you know what? I have to say, Geordie, considering you were a mum with, you know, responsibilities and time pressures and time constraints, you were amazing. You did tours, you did shows, you know, you really followed your creative passion. And
well, I think, but I sometimes feel to the detriment of being a mum, actually, Michelle, because I was also trying to hold down a day job and that was difficult too, on very little money. So I don't know how I did it. I couldn't do it now and I couldn't be in a band now because I like to be in bed early and it's late night and you've got to do all that humping.
No, I think we'll just stick to being podcasters.
Was it you that said somebody says it's called humping? Like you just really learnt recently that humping is carrying heavy things.
No,
was that
wasn't
you
me.
That told me? Somebody said it recently, and I said, "Yeah, humping. You hump your amps. You have to lift them up and put them back in the lockup."
We called it lugging.
Lugging, yeah.
Lugging gear.
Humping or lugging, yeah.
I mean, you. I remember you told me a fascinating story of how you were nearly discovered on the streets of London.
Oh, Dave Stewart.
Yes.
Oh, yes.
I love this story.
When I first moved to London, I bought a guitar from Notting Hill Music Exchange within days of landing and went busking because I had no other work. And I was living in a squat. And my friend Joe was with me and we would go around busking.
Yeah.
And one day we went out amongst, I don't know why, what took us up from underground. We're usually underground when we were busking. But
in the tube?
Yeah. We were, and it was illegal back then. Yeah, but there was a code and you would like have to save pictures or book pictures, but it was amongst the other buskers that you did this.
Right.
And one day we were walking the streets. It was, what's that street with Bar Italia on Frith Street? And at the back of it, the Marquee Club was still there. And at the back of the Marquee Club was the Marquee Bar, I think it was. And we walked past the entrance and Dave Stewart was standing in the doorway having a drink. This is way back in the 90s, early 90s. And
for our younger listeners, you may as well explain who Dave Stewart is.
Eurythmics.
Yes. He was the dude behind the Eurythmics.
And not only was he the Eurythmics, he was also a songwriter and he's also in the process, and I didn't know this at the time, wish I did, the process of starting a record label, populating it with people that he'd found, musicians from the street. So that's why he said,
God,
sing us a song.
Geordie.
And I was like, okay. But Jo had disappeared. She'd gone off to get a light from someone. And they had said, they had a bar. It was Couscous House or something. They said, why don't you come and sing us a song? Like, why don't you come and work here every Thursday, Friday night, entertain the guests. We'll give you free food. We thought, yeah, that'll do. So that was an eventful day because...
But did you sing?
I didn't sing. No. My friend Moira was standing next to me and she wasn't part of the group. So I just thought, oh, fuck, I can't think of anything. I was like, nah, my friend Joe's not here. Then Joe walked up and said, we've got to go. They're going to give us a job at this couscous house. And I was like, we should sing a song for this guy. And she said, fuck it, let's go.
Oh,
I don't think she realized
God.
Who it was. So we walked off and left him hanging. And then I said, come down and watch us in this bar. Yeah, yeah. We'll be singing there later. He didn't come all night. I was like, fuck, I hope he comes. And he didn't come. But there was a production company there who were in the process of creating a new youth TV program called The Word on Channel 4. And they employed us as extras in the title sequence. And that was fun. And we did get paid. And we were in the title sequence and in the little idents for The Word.
Do you ever look back and think, if I had sung for Dave Stewart, would my life be different?
It was a massive regret for me for many years, Michelle, and I've now let it go.
Well, you have to, because you can't change it. But yeah, that's fate and life.
I know. Do you know, talking about Adamant, do you know my Adamant story as well?
Oh, God, I think I have heard this. Go.
I was working in a fashion store on Sloane Street, and one of the girls who's Chinese Australian was leaving that day, and she was all up for going for a drink at lunchtime, so we did. And she's quite a bit younger than me, so she didn't know who Adamant was. We were sitting in that bar. I think it's called The Bunch of Grapes. Have I told this before on this podcast?
No, you've told me.
Next to Harvey Nichols, there's a pub called the Bunch of Grapes. I'm not sure. Anyway, we were sitting with our backs to the window, and this person walked past and kind of peered in, and I turned around and I thought, he looks like an aging pop or rock star. He had the look of him. He was holding all these Vivienne Westwood bags, and he had like a beret on, a massive heavy coat. It was the middle of August, boiling hot, and dreadlock, like little rat's tails down his back and stuff. And he wandered off, and I just thought, oh, that was interesting. Then he came in, and he came in and he bought two gin and tonics and stood at a table not far from us. Yeah. And it was, at those days you could smoke. He was smoking Lucky Strikes. And I thought, who is he? He looks really, really familiar. And we carried on chatting. I thought, well, it's not Adamant, because don't drink, don't smoke. That what do you do? Don't drink, don't smoke. And he was chuffing away on the Lucky Strikes. Anyway, he kind of just moved one of his drinks and stood near us and listened to, like, he was listening to us. There was no one else in the pub. And then he said, girls, are you Australian? He was eavesdropping. He said, are you Australian? And we said, yes. He said, oh, I love Australia. Molly Meldrum. I know him. He's great. I was like, Molly Meldrum from Countdown. He was like, yeah, which is like our version of Top of the Pops.
Yeah.
And he said, yeah, yeah. Oh, yeah, I've toured there many times with my band. And I said, oh, what was the band? He said, The Ants. And he sat down. And I said, oh, like Adam and the Ants? He said, yep, that's it. And I said, so you're Adam of Adam and the Ants. And now the girl I was with had no idea who that was. And she was flying by this point. So he sat with us. We had a great time chatting. He said, I said, oh, I used to love Adam and the Ants when I was a kid. I had all the pictures of you on my wall. And he said, well, just so you know, you could see me, but I couldn't see you. And I was like, yeah, I know. Yeah. But what I didn't know at the time, I was thinking, how does he know I used to talk to those pictures? And say, when you're 40 and I'm 20, we're going to get married. But anyway, he didn't know that. And I didn't confess to that. But I didn't know he had a stalker who used to do that, and it ruined his life. Yeah, that was partly went towards his mental breakdown that he eventually had, and that sent him off. He was recently out of some sort of mental institution. Because did you not hear what happened to him that
no,
year?
No, I don't know the story.
He'd been arrested, and he told me about it as well. He'd been arrested outside a pub in North London. He'd gone there. I think it was his wife's current husband had been winding him up, and he went round there. I think he wanted to see his daughter, and he showed me pictures of his daughter Lily. At the time, she was only about 4 years old.
Hang on, his wife's current husband. Do you mean his?
No, his ex-wife. His ex-wife. Her name's Lorraine. Current husband didn't get on with him. They were stopping him from seeing his daughter, and he went round there angry with a starter pistol. He didn't tell me about the starter pistol, but that was in the paper.
Shit.
And he made a bit of a fuss, and he was sectioned.
Fucking hell.
Yeah. And he was in an institution for some time. And I think when I met him, he wasn't long out of it.
Do you think there is a connection between creative, successful people and mental illness?
Well, because maybe taking a lot of drugs and drinking. Yeah, the pressures of fame. Maybe. I would say that's the direct link. But for Adam Ant, who was such a lovely chap, we had such a nice time in the pub. I never wanted to go. I was back to work late. Flying
in trouble.
The girl I was with didn't even come back.
Oh my God, what? She stayed with Adam.
She stayed there talking to another bloke, and then Adam went on his way. And then suddenly I was downstairs and they said, oh, someone's here to see you in the shop. I came up and it was him. He'd asked me by name. We walked around the shop.
And he asked me your number.
We did swap numbers, but he never called me. Adam, I still have the same bloody number. Call me. Anyway, we walked around the shop. He bought loads, so they shouldn't complain to me because he bought loads of stuff, bless him.
Yeah.
And then we went out. I held him a cab and we had a chat, another cigarette. He jumped in a cab. He pecked me on the cheek and said goodbye. We'd had a really lovely day.
Oh, that sounds wonderful.
And I just thought, who can I tell? I told my parents. I said, do you remember I used to really love Adam and the Ants? And they were like, no, darling. Wasn't it Johnny Farnham you used to love? No, Mum.
No!
No. Cliff Richard? No, Mum. Adam Ant. They didn't know who he was.
God. Oh, I love that story. Oh,
it was the best
wonderful.
Day of my life. No, it wasn't really. It was one of the greatest days of my life. I just thought, oh, that's so cool. That is so fucking cool. Who did you have a crush on when you were a kid?
I told you, Boy George.
So you loved Boy George?
I did love Boy George. Like, it was almost obsessive. And
oh, my God.
Yeah, I loved him. I just thought he was amazing. And obviously, like, I've met him since. Yes, because I was working at Elle magazine and he came and did a DJ set for us. And
did you
talk
to him?
Yes, I went up. I mean, this was when he was old and fat. So this was actually, you know, not so long ago. And he had that weird thing where he would paint. Yeah, come on. And he would do that weird thing where, because he had like that unfortunate affliction where your chin suddenly goes to your neck. There's no definition.
Right.
And so he was doing that weird thing where he would paint around his jawline to his neck black. It was all black. He would paint it, like put makeup on. So
there you go, girls, a makeup tip.
There you go, hot makeup tip from Boy George.
Paint your neck black.
Yeah. And do you know what? I went up to him and it was so silly because I felt a little bit nervous, and I don't feel nervous around famous people because
you're so cool.
No, but I've been around famous people all my life, really. Like loads. I always...
Ever since you went up to Cliff Richard in the Hilton Hotel.
You got it. You got it in one. You know, I've never...
Siebel Townhouse.
I've never been worried about, you know, meeting famous people. Yeah. And I've met loads of famous people in my life. But I went up to him and I said, hi, I used to love you when I was a kid. And we started chatting and he was lovely. He was doing his DJ set and...
Did you have to say when I was a kid? I think that I'd think twice about saying that because now you want to be seen as a contemporary. You don't want to be him to look at you as a kid or for him to feel like he's an old man.
No, but you know what? I was just fangirling him. You know, I was. It wasn't. Yeah, I wasn't going up to him as like an employee or, you know, somebody associated with the magazine. It was literally, oh, I used to love you when I was a kid and had all your posters. And I'm sure that is the standard line that every single person says to him. Yeah. But yeah, I loved Boy George so much. Like I said, my sister was into Wham. And yeah, I liked Wham, but she loved them. But you know what? It's only been in recent years that I have truly understood how amazing George Michael is. Did you see that documentary?
Yes, I did. I wasn't a fan of his back in the day.
No, me either.
But I do love his tunes now.
Me too. And I think that I have really come to appreciate like how magical his voice is. It's warm and he's a fantastic
singer. He's a good singer. Yeah.
But as a songwriter too, like moving.
A natural heir to the Freddie Mercury throne, possibly.
Oh, God. And Freddie, my God, what a talent. Yeah. And you know, I liked Queen when I was a kid, but I think it's only, you know.
Same.
As I get older, I have new appreciation.
Yeah, I loved them. Anything that got too popular, Michelle, I turned my back to it. So Radio Gaga, turned my back too much, too famous, didn't like it. But now I love it.
Yeah, I love them all. And actually, he has a real connection with Switzerland. So down in Montreux, there's a huge like brass statue of him. Because he was there a lot. He recorded there. He had a house there. Mm. He was there in the last weeks before he died recording. Aww. Yeah, and there's a really strong connection with Freddie Mercury and Switzerland. But yeah, I love him. And it's so sad, you know, all this talent wasted. Yeah. I mean, I think the same about Amy Winehouse. I was actually not really a fan of Amy Winehouse
at the time.
Yeah.
Mostly because I remember when she first started out and I was working at a magazine called Heat, which in Australia I think is the same as, I don't know, one of your rags. Like
Who?
Who Weekly. Yeah, similar kind of vibe. And I was working at Heat and we had this thing, Where's Wino? Every week we had this column, Where's Wino?
Oh, because Heat was quite the scathing magazine.
Oh, we were nasty.
The one that would circle all the dimples on people's legs and boob hanging out. Yeah.
I have to say, part of my job was doing things like that and writing the nasty captions on the pictures.
I loved one of your captions. I cracked up the day that I saw Gordon Ramsay, a close-up of his face. It was just because he was on that night and it said, and he was holding two chopsticks or something and underneath it said, fuck sticks. And that was you.
It was me. Do you know what? It's funny because when I first started at Heat, they had never had an Australian on the staff. And I just brought a different mentality to those picture captions. It was one of my most fun jobs.
Yeah, that was good. They were good times because that was when I was working nearby in the 60s. So we would meet up for lunch a lot and go for drinks after work quite a lot.
Oh,
hi,
God.
Terry, old Terry in Germany now. He was there too.
Yeah. But I just remember we would be so mean to poor Amy Winehouse in that magazine. And, you know, it was always like, Where's Wino? About all the fuck-ups. You know, she was falling
Meanwhile,
out of
she's
cabs.
Having a mental breakdown.
Yeah, and being completely exploited. And again, I love a good music documentary. I'm obsessed by them. I would say that Amy Winehouse documentary that came out was heartbreaking. And gave you a real insight into the lack of support she had from her family and also just the level of her drug addiction. I think one of the saddest lines in that documentary was where she was saying, what are the British music awards? Don't even remember.
Ivor Novello.
No, she never won that, I don't think. But anyway, she just won, or maybe it was the NME Awards. Anyway, she cleaned up. She'd won everything. No, my God, she won a Grammy.
Oh, God.
She won a fucking Grammy. And and she was there and afterwards she said to her friend, because she was sober at this point, because she wasn't allowed to go to America. Because of her drug convictions. And she said to her friend, this is the career highlight of my life. And it just feels like nothing. Without drugs, this feels like nothing. And I just thought, how fucking sad, you know, that.
So she wasn't happy unless she was on drugs.
Well, nothing compared to, like, this
to
was
being on
this
drugs.
Was this
oh,
was
I
a
see.
Flat this was a flat moment compared to the high of being on drugs.
Oh God.
I mean, I wish I could, the way she said it was so succinct, because she's funny as fuck in that documentary, you know. But yeah, I just thought that's a real insight into somebody who is so lost. It was really sad. But you know, also other good music documentaries, the Metallica one.
I haven't seen
it. My God, it's brilliant. You've got to watch it.
Some Kind of Monster, it's called, isn't it? Yeah, I must look that up.
And, I mean, God, we should actually write a little list and put it on in the show notes of our favourite music documentaries, because they really are one of my favourite things to watch. If I'm at a loose end, I will.
Me too.
I'll watch a music doc.
I love the Fleetwood Mac one.
Yeah, wonderful.
I love Fleetwood Mac.
Me too. Eavesdropping.
Eavesdrop, wow, wow, wow,
just eavesdropping.
Eavesdrop, eavesdrop, eavesdropping.
I had a little a list of bands that I loved from the very beginning, the ones that I would say shaped or formed my musical taste today.
Okay.
And it went from ABBA to Parallel Lines Blondie.
Yeah.
That particular album. Kiss was next.
Oh.
Do, 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 do. No?
Yes, of course. I Was Made for Loving You, Baby.
That's it.
Sure Know Something was always my favorite.
Sure Know Something, I sure know. Yeah. That was a good one. I forgot
it was
that one.
Beautiful song. Really fantastic song. They were ugly as fuck. Thank God they had that makeup on.
I was in love with Ace Frehley. And
we all were.
I had his solo album as well. And I bought The Doll, which came out in God knows when. It's vintage now. I think I sold it on eBay for quite a bit of money.
Well done.
But it had a broken leg. And I Luckily, it didn't happen, but I wanted the doll so I could pick the makeup off so I could see what he looked like.
Yeah.
Underneath.
Oh, God.
I still don't know what he looks like.
Really?
No.
Yeah, they hide that, thank God.
One time I was in Oslo, a different time when I was working. I was in a hotel, mm-hmm. quite a fancy hotel, and yeah. I was there the same day as Kiss, but I just missed. They said, oh, you've just missed Kiss. They've just been here for breakfast. I was like, what?
No! Crying your eyes out. Jesus
then it
Christ.
Was Adamant, the police around the same
oh,
time.
God,
and
the police.
I was in love with probably all three of them. Have shaped, I think people have said to me that I keep going out with boys or men who look like members of the police, mostly Stuart Copeland.
Well, so does your son, to be honest.
So I'm surrounded by, I'm basically living, which one am I then? I'll be Andy Summers, the other two. No, he's a fantastic guitarist.
I mean, I loved the police. I had their albums. Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic was always such a special song for me.
Why?
I loved it. I just thought, like, melodically, it really
yes.
connects
Eel.
To me. Yeah, it's
Eel.
Beautiful. Absolutely
love
beautiful.
It.
God, I love... Oh, police.
Everything you know, about the police is wonderful. I still love them to this day with the same strength of feeling.
Me too.
And then, one day, I went on a holiday to my grandma's house in the middle of Australia, like in the food bowl of Australia, Griffith. And the only shop in that town was Woolworths. And what was the other side of Woolworths where they had, you could buy cassette tapes and...
Yeah, they always had all the record racks.
Yeah. Yeah. I went there one day with some pocket money and I bought a little cassette tape of The Cure, Japanese Dream. It was an EP because I'd heard the song Let's Go to Bed and I quite liked that. So mm-hmm. I bought that. I was quite young. I think it was 1983 or something. I must have been... Anyway, I don't know how old... I was young. And took it home and loved it. It changed my life.
We've also forgotten... an artist that both of us from a very young age were obsessed with.
Kate Bush?
Yes.
Well, yeah, she comes in around that time.
Yeah.
But to be honest, The Cure were first.
Really?
Yes. And then I think around that time I had bought one of her albums, The Dreaming, and loved it. And then I'd go back to all the previous songs. And then I started getting really into Kate. And she's been an enduring love for me.
Yeah.
But The Cure were the ones that changed my life because I changed my looks. I dyed my hair.
You got all gothy.
Yeah. And I was in love with the bass player from The Cure, Simon Gallup. I loved him.
The wonderful bands that we loved when we were kids. There were so many.
But there might be all Aussie ones that no one's heard of, like Pseudo Echo and Kids
oh,
in the
yeah.
Kitchen.
Uncanny X-Men, you know, oh. all of that. Where will we be in 50 years? All
Everybody
of
wants to work. No, no, not me.
But you know what? I actually have great respect for Men at Work. They had a couple of fantastic songs.
That guy, Colin, what's his name? He's incredible.
Really? Like,
I think he's an amazing songwriter and vocalist.
Yeah, really.
Na, 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 na. What's that one?
Yeah, day after day. Anyway, whatever.
What's that song? Write in.
Yes, write in.
Al Teggett will let us know.
He will. Yep. But that was actually probably... Again, because of how beautifully melodic it is, that was one of my favorite Men at Work songs. You know, mm-hmm. it was just beautiful. But
And Who Can It Be Now was also one of mine. Down Under, not so much.
No.
Because it was a jokey, pastiche kind of song.
Yeah, it was a pastiche.
It broke them. I mean, that's the song you've got to write if you want to break America, though. And that's what they did.
Yeah. I mean, he will be still living off those royalties.
He's probably living in the States.
Yeah, maybe.
Writing music for other people.
Yeah. But it was, you know, there are so many incredible Aussie bands, but also the international bands. Because like you said previously, we were so lucky to have Countdown. It was a TV show that you would not miss.
No.
Every Friday Sunday night. What?
Sunday, sorry. Top of the Pops was Friday. Sorry. Right. When I moved here when I was quite young, so...
So
yes, Top of the Pops was Friday. Countdown was Sunday.
Every Sunday night. And that would be the only thing you would talk about on Monday was, did you see Countdown?
Yeah.
And
then there was Countdown magazine, the best thing that ever happened.
Oh, we never got that. Yeah. I think, you know, it depended who was on the cover.
Cover, yeah.
You know, because
Nick Kershaw.
Jen didn't have a lot of money. God, I loved Nick Kershaw.
Wouldn't it be good? That's such a great, that's an enduring tune, that one.
Yeah. And
it makes me want to get up and dance every time.
Yep. And Thompson Twins around that time
as
well.
No, I liked them at the time. Oh, look at your face. I wish people could see Geordie's face.
Around that time, I also quite liked Sade and Paul Young, believe it or not.
Yeah, but they were the big hits.
Yeah.
But you know what?
David Bowie, Patti Smith, they were all coming into play at that time. Kate Bush.
Yeah, they were.
I had older cousins. They were the ones that influenced my musical taste. Okay. They were about eight to 10 years older than me. And Roger and Helen, shout out. I don't know.
Shout out.
Helen's records were more like Fleetwood Mac, Rolling Stones, Stevie Nicks.
Yep.
Bit of Kate Bush in there as well. Roger was more Alice Cooper, not my style, and Cheap Trick, which I did love.
Yeah, see, Jen had all of that. Unfortunately, my older sister was only 4 years older and she had very bad musical taste, so I didn't really get any influence from her at all. However, I did mention previously she did like Cold Chisel, and at the time I was like, fucking bogan bullshit band. But actually, Jimmy Barnes... When you go back and listen to the lyrics of Flame Trees or...
I love that song.
My God, what a songwriter. But
Jimmy Barnes, can I just say, while I was that year that I met Adam Ant,
yeah,
Jimmy Barnes was in the same shop, all grey-haired and twinkly-eyed. Now, I hadn't been in Australia for some time, so I didn't know that it was him. But right. I looked twice and I was like, fuck me, that's Jimmy Barnes. And he was like, how you doing?
Do you know what? It was so weird because when he was younger, I mean, I never had Cold Chisel on my radar. I didn't even think about it. But looking back, he was fucking handsome when he was younger. Yes.
Oh, I've got an aunt that absolutely adores him. Absolutely obsessed. She made it awkward. She
made it awkward. She made it awkward. How did I make it awkward?
Awkward, awkward.
How dare you?
She made it awkward. She made it awkward.
Awkward,
awkward. How are you? Awkward, awkward. How bloody awkward. Well, this is awkward. How bloody awkward.
Awkward. Bloody hell.
Fuck you.
You wanted to talk about bands that are songs that you'd have for breakups. So you kept talking about torch songs.
Yes.
What's
I
a torch
did.
Song, Michelle? Explain to me what a torch song is.
Well, do you know what? Torch songs are probably the most pathetic and miserable kind of breakup song there is, because I would say pretty much without exception, torch songs are about how you'll do whatever it takes to get someone back, even though they fucked you over, they broke your heart, they've fucked your best friend, they won't return your texts. And the reason why I think torch songs are one of the songs that people gravitate towards when they're in like the lowest, most shitty part of heartbreak is because it really speaks to the most desperate part of yourself. Because when you hear them, you know that you should feel better. You shouldn't want to take them back, but you know that if they called you, you would take them back in a heartbeat. And this is what torch songs are all about. And for me, I feel like the ultimate torch song is You Don't Have to Say You Love Me by Dusty Springfield.
Dusty Springfield, yep. Okay.
I actually have some lyrics here. So I have some lyrics from the chorus. It's basically, you don't have to say you love me, just be close at hand.
No, you have to sing it, Michelle.
Oh, my God.
You don't have to say it. Go on.
Oh, but I have to sing it in her key. Hang on.
Just do it in your key.
You don't have to say you love me, just be close at hand. You don't have to stay forever, I will understand.
Beautiful.
Believe me. Anyway, she goes on here like...
She goes much higher there.
She does.
Believe.
But she's like, I can't help but love you. I'll never tie you down. But you just... you don't even have to say you love me. You just have to, be near me. And all of this stuff is like just pathetic. But when you are in the middle of heartache, all you want...
It speaks
is
to you.
That. And look, I remember when I was going through a really bad breakup, it was music that got me through it. And
yes,
look, I feel
it
lucky.
It does, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. And I feel lucky because, it's been at least 5 years since I felt that shitty low feeling that you think you'll never recover of. And of course, you have like different levels. Like,
yeah,
I had one particular breakup which fucked me up for years. But, then you get heartbroken, little mini heartbreaks. But whatever it is, music always gets you through. But You do. And, you know, I think there are different elements of heartbreak, and you need different songs, different types of songs to get you through. So like I said, when you're feeling absolutely fucking pathetic and you don't want them back, but you really would take them back and they wouldn't even have to beg you to take them back, that's when you need a torch song, right?
In that case, I now know what a torch song is, because I don't think I quite got the measure of it before.
Okay.
And I think there's a great song by the Cardigans, Love Fool. And I love that song for many reasons.
Okay.
Because, number one, it was in my favourite film at that time, Romeo and Juliet, which if, you know, you ever want to understand that feeling of heartsick love, Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet is the film for you, because I know Romeo and Juliet by Shakespeare is a really old play and everyone's seen different versions of it, but it's Leonardo DiCaprio and Claire Danes' portrayal of Romeo and Juliet, and the way that it's all mixed in with this modern music and great costume and fabulous, like almost like a pop video style cinematography.
Yeah.
That really, it spoke to me.
Wow.
I fucking loved it. But that song, love me, yeah, say yeah. that you love me. Well, I like that song. And I also love that song because when I was in my band Max Tractor and we were doing a lot of touring and playing live most nights, the guitarist Reard, shout out, we used to be able to smoke. We were smokers. We used to be able to smoke in venues then. And I would always, we started this thing around that time where I would always go up to him with my ciggy and say, light me," and he'd say, "Say that you light me," like
oh
that.
My God.
And it ended up going, it carried on for years and years till we got to the point where Reard would be going, "Say that you light me, say that you light me." It was just a funny thing that carried on for years. But that's my torch song recommendation.
Oh, that's brilliant.
And well, Carole King.
Yeah, of course. It's too late, baby. It's
too late. That one,
baby.
Yep. Although that's kind of her saying "fuck you," so that's not really a torch song because she's a bit more empowered.
But you know what? That's the whole point of breakup songs: is that there is a breakup song for every fucking stage of how you're feeling. And
yeah,
and look, what I guess why I, you know, I'm always drawn to the breakup song when I'm feeling shit and like heartbroken is because, you know, when you're in that state, nothing makes sense. And everything is upside down, you know. And, you know, if you've broken up with someone, you've probably broken up with them for a good reason. Like, he's a dickhead. He's not nice to you. He cheated on you. In my case, maybe he was a bit too young. Whatever. But
that's another of your tunes, isn't it? Young boys are my weakness.
Yeah, we said that a few too many times. But, you know, look. On some level, whenever you break up with someone, you know it's for the best. And you know that it's clearing the path until the right one comes along. But it still fucking hurts. And,
yeah,
you know, although you don't want to hear them, you know, you don't want them to call you, you really fucking want them to call you.
Yeah.
And
you I don't know. Have any of those songs in my – in my. I think the only one that I think would be a little bit torchy would be Can We Still Be Friends? Can we still be friends? Todd Rundgren.
Yeah, I love that song. But my point is, you know, the torch song, really, there's only probably about 2 or 3 days in your heartbreak where you are that pathetic that you want a torch song.
Okay. Well, that's good to know.
Yeah. In my experience. But, you know, I also feel like there is so many stages. And because there are points where you want to put yourself through torture. You know, and you listen to songs not because you want to feel
love
better.
Love don't live here anymore.
Exactly.
Rose Royce.
Yes, you listen to all that stuff, not for fun, but for the pain of it. Because you want the pain, you know. You don't want to feel better. You want to wallow. And, you know, like there are times when you're angry and you want to feel like, fuck you, I'm over it. And then you listen to like Alanis Morissette or something. Like, you want it now. But, you know, there are also times where you just want to get into the fucking wallowing mire of like self-pity. And
so what are those songs for you?
Well,
for me, there is one that I listen to a lot, and it was called I Don't Want to Get Over You by the Magnetic Fields.
I've never heard of it or them.
Oh, God, this one. So it's a guy called Stephen Merritt, and actually he was...
sing it? I know that name.
Yeah, maybe you know that name. He was on Jules
Holland. Has he been in other things?
No, his main thing is the magnetic fields, and he obviously was going through massive trauma after a breakup because he wrote this album called 69 Love Songs, and some of them are only a minute long.
Why is it going to be 69?
Well, what do you think? And but the one that I think speaks to most people is this one. It's called I Don't Want to Get Over You, and he sings it in a really low voice. And when he was on Jules Holland, he did this.
Burst into tears.
No. And actually, I'd never seen what he looked like. And I thought, oh, he's not handsome. And he did this weird thing where he had a cigarette. He was playing it on the piano. And he had a cigarette between his index finger. And it, like,
think of all the ash going between the keys. I bet Jules was beside himself.
Yeah, but he was playing it with the cigarette coming up between, like, you know, when you do twos up, it was between those fingers. And so he was playing the piano. I don't know how he played the piano and still managed to have that cigarette, but it was gross. And I thought, oh, that's kind of a revolting habit. I wouldn't go out with you. But anyway, I love your song. And so anyway, the lyrics are, and this is the thing, when you read lyrics out, they're so flat on the page. You know, you read them out and you feel like there's no magic in that. But then when someone sings it, and this is with any song, there's so much in the way people sing it and the music and the arrangement. And so anyway, that particular song just got me through a lot. I'll put the lyrics and a link to the song in the show notes. But another killer heartbreak song for me was Nothing Compares to You.
Yes, I was going to say Sinead O'Connor when I said about the tears rolling down the face, because that reminded me of that video where she's burst into tears.
Well, look, and I don't always want to hark back to old relationships, but this song fucking destroyed me, because I had just gone to London to see, and I'd been staying with you, I'd seen you, Blake was with me, he's an ex-boyfriend, my first real boyfriend, and I was going off to jet, you know, like I say jet around Europe, that's absolute bullshit. I was on a fucking Eurail, and which I was forging to try and get more trips out of it. But anyway,
cheeky.
So I was at Victoria Station, and he was going back to Australia to finish like his last year of university, and we were at Victoria Station. And in fact, I think Sandra was with me as well.
Did you hold his face in your hands and say, oh, you great hunk of spunk, nothing compares to you?
How did you know? Were you there? No, do you know what it was? It was so random, because we'd gone into some shit pub in Victoria Station.
Well, and then there's Sandra on the side just watching the whole thing unravel. What a heartbreak.
I can't even remember if Sandra was there, but Sandra and I did bond over being away from our long-term partners. It was heartbreaking at that time. But we were – so Blake and I were at Victoria Station, and like I said, probably drinking snake bite or some bullshit. And it was time for me to get on my bus. And I actually think either it came on the jukebox, or maybe he went over and put the money in and selected it. I don't know. But Nothing Compares to You came on.
Sorry.
And – we both were sobbing, just sobbing. And I'm not even joking.
I just love the fact that he put the tune on and then sauntered up to you. Had to get a hanky out halfway through just to dab his eyes.
Okay, look, maybe it came on. I don't know. But Jordy,
nothing compares to you.
Well, because I think we had been singing this song, and the thing is, I used to call him Bubba, and there's a line in the song which is like,
all the flowers that you sent me, Mama.
Yes, but I always used to say,
you change it
to
Bubba.
I think it was planted. Yeah, like, all the flowers that you planted, Bubba. And so it was like a
you
little thing, and but I just remember I
sobbed, like to the point where my whole body
heaving. We were sitting on the bus, heaving sobs.
No, we were outside the bus station, like putting my luggage underneath into the belly of the bus. And
Alan, the bus driver, was like, "Jesus, pull your socks up, mate, get over it."
No, well, this is in London, so it'd be some Cockney East London. Don't.
You're right, darling. Might never happen.
Might never happen. And I just remember I was. Fuck, my whole body was shaking. I've never before or since cried like that. And I turned around and he was doing the same. And I just have this visual of...
big red face.
I was there like looking out the window at him.
Hands up against the glass.
Yeah. And we were just both sobbing our eyes out.
I love the
out.
Fact
my
that,
God.
That maybe Sandra was standing there as well, arms folded going, "God, come on, for God's sake."
Quite possible. But it was just really, I mean, we weren't even breaking up.
I'm sorry for laughing
about it. We weren't even breaking up. You know, it was just that I was going off to travel around Europe and he was going back to Australia. We were being separated.
Oh my God, it's awful to be, but that, again, I'm going to say, just go back and watch Baz Luhrmann's Romeo and Juliet and you'll know exactly how it feels.
Do you know what? I will. And actually at that time, Claire Danes was going out with a
friend of yours.
Yeah, Ben Lee. But anyway, yeah, that was a terrible breakup song. But I always remember, actually, Blake would say one of the worst breakup songs of all time, Winner Takes It All.
The winner takes it all. Yeah, she almost looks like she's crying in that one as well, like Agnetha.
That video, my God. ABBA. That is a heartbreaker.
I don't want to talk.
But you know what? And there's, I just want to give a shout out to a really fantastic artist called Kim Ritchie, who, when I was going through a more recent heartbreak, it was her songs that whenever I just wanted to cry and feel like so fucking broken, they were the songs. In particular, a song called Word to the Wise and another one called The Absence of Your Company. And
she's an incredible songwriter.
And an incredible singer. I mean, she's one... Well, her song won a Grammy. She wrote...
Did she?
Yeah, she wrote a song called Believe Me, Baby, I Lied for Trisha Yearwood. And...
Okay.
Yeah, really, really brilliant. And, I mean, she is one of the most underrated country singers of all time. But she is...
And a lovely, lovely lady.
She really is. She's spectacular.
Shout out, Kim. I don't know if she listens, but she's definitely following us on Instagram.
Shout out, actually, to Jez, who was the songwriter in my old band, Farah. And I remember a friend of mine, he had just gone through a breakup. And I remember him texting me one day saying, "It's by listening to As Soon As I Get Over You." And
what was the name of the album where Killian was modelling on the front cover? Was that called Me Too?
Yes, maybe it was Me Too. It was the Me Too album. My God, fucking hell, I hadn't even connected that, the Me Too movement. Fucking hell. Anyway, even when you were saying it, I didn't get it.
I could see it. The penny was not dropping.
The penny did not drop. Fuck. Yeah, heartbreak songs for me.
Heartbreak.
And of course, the ultimate heartbreak song.
Yeah.
Against All Odds. Phil Collins!
How can you just walk away from me? I don't like that one.
No, but come on. It's classic. It's a classic!
Do you know what? I'm going to say one great love song.
Okay.
You know when I got married the last time, the most recent time, I made a playlist. So there was one song, which is very long, Kate Bush on her 50 Words for Snow album. It's called Snowed In at Wheeler Street. It is the most amazing song. Even old Elton John makes an appearance on it because they're singing together.
Wow.
And it's about a love story, a love of two people that have transcended eons. So they met in a certain era. They loved each other then. Then again in the war, she hid him under her bed, but they found him and took him away. Then again on the steps of somewhere or other. I mean, I don't know all the words. And it's just amazing. I love it.
Oh, we'll have to put a link to that in the show notes too. Oh, do you know what? Anyone who's listening, please, like, tell us your favourite songs that have got you through heartbreak or inspires you, love. We might have to do another music episode because I just feel...
There's so much to talk
about. So much to talk about and we've got to go. We do.
Time to go.
Hit us up on all the socials. Email hello@eavesdroppingpodcast.com. Don't look at the latest
spelling.
Don't follow the link on my latest Instagram post because my finger slipped. Perhaps.
but yeah, we'd love to hear your stories. And until then,
you know what, people, just keep eavesdropping.
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 Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping. Eavesdropping.